Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
We're seeing an expansion of where things are greening up nicely. That does include those areas of the southern plains where we've seen quite a bit of wet weather in April and early May.
Pasture and rangeland conditions are improving. Brad Rippey, meteorologist, USDA.
We now see pasture and ranges 54% good to excellent in Kansas and Oklahoma, emblematic of that recent rainfall. Things are really looking quite green from the Mississippi Valley eastward. Handful of states even above 80% good to excellent, and that list includes Missouri at 86%, Alabama 84%, and Pennsylvania at 81%. And even the Northwest has seen some nice greening this year. We have numbers in the 66 to 68% good to excellent range in our northwestern states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
As we mark a historic milestone in our mission to make America healthy again, we started Make America Great Again, Bobby. I'm not sure you can get away with that without having to make a major payment because, you know, this was...
I copyright.
Maha. He goes to Maha. But no, Maha's become hot.
Rolling out the Make America Healthy Again Commission Report, Donald Trump from the White House on Thursday.
Over the past few years, we've built an unstoppable coalition of moms and dads, doctors and young people and citizens of all backgrounds who have come together to protect our children, very importantly, keep the dangerous chemicals out of our food supplies, get toxic substances out of our environment, and deliver the American people the facts as to really where we're going, and we want to have what we deserve, and we want to be healthy, and we want to have a lot of good things happen, and I think we're going to have that. I think this is just the beginning. We have some of the most brilliant people sitting on this panel, and likewise in the audience, I recognize so many. Many of them are in the administration. With us today is the man who fought harder than anyone I know to bring these issues to the center of American politics, our Secretary of Health and Human Services, Robert F. Kennedy, Jr. Bobby, thank you very much.
Mission led by the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Robert F. Kennedy, Jr.
This report is a call to action for common sense. We've relied too much on conflicted research, ignored common sense, or what would some would call mother's intuition. It's common sense that ultra-processed, nutrient-poor food contributes to chronic disease. It's common sense that excessive screen time and isolation lead to anxiety and depression, especially in children. It's common sense that exercise and healthy food should come before prescriptions and surgery. It's common sense that not all calories are equal in nutritional value. It's common sense that over-medicating kids is dangerous. It's common sense that we can celebrate the innovations of modern life while also demanding fearless inquiry into ameliorating the negative effects of medication, agriculture, and environmental practices. It's common sense that research funded by corporations deserves more scrutiny than independent studies. I'm so proud of this cabinet, and particularly Secretary Rawlins and Administrator Zeldin, who, again, I'll say it a third time, work late nights, early into the morning to make this happen, and to all the leadership from the White House staff, beginning with Stephen Miller, and Heidi Overton, Dr. Heidi Overton, with Vince Haley. Their leadership and their steady hand in getting us to the goal line was, we could not have done it without them. They helped us grapple with weighty issues and committed this administration to solving large, complex challenges like children's health. We're joined here by senators, advocates, governors who I have worked with, and CEOs who I know who are all ready to begin carrying out this mission. This is the beginning of a conversation, a national conversation that we are going to have with maturity, with nuance, for the first time in history, thanks to your leadership, President Trump. There is a reason that the Maha Moms sided with you, President Trump. It's because this administration has the bravery to tell the truth and solve problems through innovation and not nanny state regulation. President Trump, I'm honored to present you the Maha Report and work with this incredible cabinet that you have brought together to make our children healthy again.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Funding construction is an ongoing huge issue here. I know I worked on a Passamaquoddy school from the time I got here to many, many years trying to make sure that they got across the finish line, and it can take, you know, decades to get the funding for these schools.
Interior Secretary Doug Burgum taking questions from Shelley Pingree, representative from Maine, in the House Appropriations Subcommittee.
And while, as you've all noted, there are tribes that have the resources to do amazing things in their own community, many tribes are just not in that position. So I hope we can restore that funding level, and certainly you'll hear from this committee that we're interested in that. And I wanted to start with a question on, it's following up a little bit on what both of my colleagues have mentioned on how the funding gets spent and allocated. So the continuing resolution for 2025 enacted more than 2 months ago, was enacted more than 2 months ago, now we're 8 months into the fiscal year. And given that timing, it's just critical that the department quickly obligate the appropriated funding. So my example on that is similar to what Mr. Cole was asking about, but it's actually a different pot of money. I'm hearing concerns from the Maine State Historic Preservation Office that they have not received the state-by-state apportionment, nor has the Park Service issued a notice of funding opportunity. So as a result, in the state of Maine, we're facing a potential layoff of the federally funded staff, and Maine is not alone. This manufactured, in my mind, funding crisis is being inflicted on all of our states. For example, 12 people have already been laid off in Ohio, and that amounts to about a third of their staff in the state Historic Preservation Office. These offices have an integral role in the advancement of federal projects, and holding back the funds that Congress appropriated for these offices means delaying projects, including in the oil and gas sector. So I did contact your office about this last week. I'm expecting that you might have an update for me. Do you know the status of these funds?
We're waiting on the apportionment to come, but we're pushing hard on trying to get this out because it's, as you say, we have every incentive. Our incentives are in line with yours to get these dollars out the door.
So, I mean, the chair asked you a question earlier about the 2026 budget, and if we appropriate money that goes beyond what's in this skinny budget or what we see in the full budget, will you spend the money? You said it's the law. The Interior Bill, which is in the CR, contains a provision that requires that amounts appropriated to the Department of Interior, quote, shall be available for obligation and expenditure not later than 60 days after the date of enactment of the act, and as you said, that's the law. OMB is not a portion of the funding. You just said that. But we are past the 68-day deadline, and I just want to know the role that you're taking. Are you pushing the OMB to appropriate your department's funding?
Well, I didn't bring a stack of communication that's gone back and forth, but I would say that would represent that, yeah, we're pushing.
Okay, pushing is good. So just from my perspective, if you don't get this funding, then that is impoundment. It is breaking the law, and I think perhaps on both sides of the aisle, we're feeling very frustrated. This administration is not expeditiously appropriating what we funded. I guess I would just have to say, you know, and I mentioned to you earlier, there's a lot of frustration here. You know, Congress has the power of the purse. We meet in this committee, and we do an incredible amount of work, you know, negotiating back and forth on both sides of the aisle to arrive at these numbers and to figure out what should be done. And to have this administration just wantonly disregard what we have done and to worry about having to do that in the next 2026 budget, I would ask, you know, why do committees meet? Why do we do the work that we're doing if, in fact, we can't count on the OMB to do what is being done? And I know there are layers here, and I really appreciate saying that you've got a stack of communications because I fully believe you're doing that, and I know you have a lot of executive experience. So I am just encouraging you to put full force of pressure on it to not break the law and to do what's required to do.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
At the wholesale level, a prime carcass is worth $300 more than a choice. And that was on average for last year. It's more than that right now.
John Sticka, President, Certified Angus Beef Brand.
A C&B carcass is worth $136 more on average, and a select and a no roller standard carcass on a 9-weight carcass weight, again, are at significant discounts. What's exciting to see as we look at these numbers, because this is important, because it sends the signal about why I don't believe this is a debate around quality or commodity. This chart up here shows you the certified Angus beef to choice spread over time in the green. The fact that that gets wider as we move to the right says that that spread is getting more significant. The red is the choice select spread. And you can see that getting wider as we move to the right. And keep in mind where the value of this slide comes into. We've got widening spreads at the wholesale level while we're putting more of these kind of quality carcasses on the market.
Talks about premiums for quality.
More supply at widening spreads, I think, speaks to the demand signals that, again, have helped lead us to where we are today. This ultimately gets translated into grid premiums that then reflect back to what I shared earlier, where a certified Angus beef carcass is worth roughly $80 to $100 more than the cash base price on a grid. And specific to prime, this slide here is a little, maybe a little hard to read in terms of trying to decipher what it says, but the yellow line reflects the carcass tonnage that we've put on the market on a weekly basis. For the spread of that slide, we've basically quadrupled the volume of prime on the market. And you can see that that prime premium over choice on the grid still sits solidly between 25, 15, and 20 bucks. Okay, and that's an average. Now, I've cherry-picked something. I'm coming clean. I cherry-picked an example, a real-world example that I want to share with you of what can happen when high-grading cattle hit a marketplace or a marketing method that really rewards quality. And I think it's pretty impressive. This is a set of heavyweight heifers, 59 of them sold in January. When I say heavyweight heifers, these heifers had an average carcass weight of 1,020. Okay, so they were big. These cattle went 100% choice and prime, 75% prime on a premium on this grid of 34 bucks, 100. They only went 12% CAB because too many of them went prime. Okay, and that premium was 7 bucks, 748 is what that was. They yielded back a per head premium for quality of $372, as you can see on the screen. Now granted, they were heavy and they were a little bit fat, and so we've got some discounts in there. But even when you pencil in those discounts for being 29% fours and fives, 15% over 1,100 pounds, you take that in there, that's a discount of $17 a head, you still get a net result of $355. That's significant, and that's what's driving this revolution and continual improvement towards quality. Now, it was brought up yesterday, and I couldn't agree more with Lee around the fact that we are going to see increased focus on improving red meat yield, reducing back fat, producing carcasses that have more product that we can sell and less to trim off. We can do it more efficiently in the feed yard, more efficiently on the ranch as well, more than likely. And that's going to come at some point, but I would tell you, it's not going to be a focus on red meat yield at the expense of quality. It's going to be a focus on both.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
4 months ago, I created the Presidential Commission to Make America Healthy Again, and today the commission officially delivers its first report on childhood health.
From the White House on Thursday, President Donald Trump.
Here are just some of the alarming findings, and they really are alarming. It's unbelievable, terrible. More than 40% of American children now have at least one chronic health condition. Since the 1970, rates of childhood cancer have soared in many cases by nearly 50%, 50%. Well, in the 1960s, less than 5% of the children were obese. Now over 20% are obese. A few decades ago, one in one, think of this one. This is to me the one that gets me every time, and it seems to be getting worse. Just a few decades ago, one in 10,000 children had autism. Today it's one in 31. Last time I heard the number is one in 34, right? Now it's one in 31. There's something wrong, and we will not stop until we defeat the chronic disease epidemic in America. We're going to get it done. For the first time ever, this report examines some of the root causes that many believe are making our children sicker and our population sicker, I guess. It just doesn't stop with the children. It's our population also. Such as the ultra-processed foods, over-medicalization and over-prescription and widespread exposure to potentially toxic chemicals. Unlike other administrations, we will not be silenced or intimidated by the corporate lobbyists or special interests. And I want this group to do what they have to do. We have to spell it out. In some cases, it won't be nice or it won't be pretty, but we have to do it. When you hear 10,000, it was 1 in 10,000, and now it's 1 in 31 for autism. I think that's just a terrible thing. has to be something on the outside, has to be artificially induced, has to be. And will not allow our public health system to be captured by the very industries it's supposed to oversee. So we're demanding the answers. The public is demanding the answers, and that's why we're here. Already we're phasing out 8 of the most common artificial food dyes.
Trump joined by the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Robert F. Kennedy, and Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins.
Earlier this week, we approved a SNAP waiver request from Nebraska so they can stop taxpayer dollars from being used to make our children obese. I understand requests from 3 more states will be approved shortly, and more are expected to come in the following weeks. Over the next 80 days, the commission will build on its work in this report to develop a roadmap to bold and transformative public health reforms for our consideration. It's a consideration, and we'll lay out the facts. Let me say congratulations to the entire MAHA movement. This movement has become very hot. People are really, I tell you, they're going crazy over MAHA. And I look forward to continuing the historic progress. And I will say this whole group, this whole table, they're very, you know, I use a word that's, because it's a beautiful word, actually. The Democrats took it and they used it instead of the word liberal. They used the word progressive. And normally I'd say you're very progressive, meaning you're far. They're not progressive. You are progressive. They shouldn't be allowed to use that word. And so therefore I'm not going to use it to describe you, but you are far forward thinkers. You're amazing thinkers, and we appreciate having you. It's just tremendous talent around this table, the most respected people.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
BLM, for example, has got, they have field offices, they have district offices, they have regional offices, they have state offices, and then there's a federal office. And I don't know any, you know, corporation today that's in any business, but even if you were in the timber management business, or if you're in the raising business, you know, you wouldn't have 5 layers between headquarters and the front lines. I mean, with today's systems, you might have 3, but you wouldn't have 5.
Doug Burgum is Secretary of the Interior, answering questions from a House Appropriations Subcommittee.
So whatever we're doing to try to streamline, at the end of the day, we want to end up with more people, more minutes on mission, as we say, more people that are out there getting it done. And then in some cases, we just have to change the administrative rules. I mean, I was in with you in Nevada last week. I guess it was Friday. We were there Friday afternoon, meeting with the governor and with Secretary Turner from HUD. And the Southern Nevada Lands Act has been around since Harry Reid was in office, and it's a very structured process for how we move BLM land into other uses in Southern Nevada. And one of those uses is affordable housing. And so we were at a project. We, after our meeting with the roundtable with all the local, we went out to that 18 acres. In the administrative rules, it's being transferred to the city of Henderson for a 390-unit, $120 million affordable housing project at $100 an acre. I mean, this is a huge benefit for that project. Representative, I said, well, how fast can they get going? They said, well, we're waiting for the appraisal. And I said, it says in administrative rules it's $100. It's not going to change. It's $100 an acre. They said, yes, but we're still required to do an appraisal. And I'm like, why are we required to do an appraisal? Well, because that's also in these rules. So then we have conflicting rules. And then I said, well, how long does the appraisal take? They said, well, it could take longer than 6 months, but that's a problem, because if it's longer than 6 months, then it's outdated and we have to start over again. It trips this continuous thing. And, you know, these are the things that coming from the private sector, I'm just like, I get motivated when I hear these things, because I'm like, we just have to get rid of all of this. This creates more work for the people on the front lines, and we get less things done. And in the end of the day, what we did in North Dakota, we cut, when I took office, we were having a huge revenue crisis because of the, having a revenue drop. We had to cut $1.7 billion out of a $6 billion general fund in a little state like North Dakota, $1.7 billion in my first 4 months, coming from the private sector. All the trains still ran on time. That was 27% cut. And we did that. And part of it is we got rid of the things that were getting in the way of the team members doing the jobs that they wanted to do. People go into government because they want to make a difference. They don't go into government because they want to push paper and use 50-year-old IT systems. So anyway, there's a way to end up with more meaningful, purposeful, effective jobs and reduce costs, because I've done it. I mean, I know that's true. But in this case, you're spot on, Representative, in terms of the around the appraisals and around the need for making sure. And I would say, you mentioned, you know, Winnemucca, Elko, you know, all these communities where it's hard to staff. Those guys are the lifeblood of our agencies, the people that are working in these remote areas. And we need more of them, and we need, you know, frankly, we need less people in Washington, D.C. The people in Washington, D.C., when I walked into that building that holds 4,000 people, there was nobody there. I mean, so it's like, you know, they're all working remotely, but they weren't working remotely from Elko, yeah. Right? And so it's like, we want to get people out, out on the ground doing the job that serves, you know, the timber industry, the grazing industry, the mining industry, the recreation industry, the wildlife, outdoors, fish and game industries. I mean, outdoor recreation is a $1.2 trillion industry. We're serving them too. So we've got, there's big opportunity for us to cut overhead and get more people on the ground.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
We are still very positive to the market.
Troy Appelhans is a senior market analyst with Cattle Facts.
We also know that we deal in fundamentals a lot, and this is a very fluid situation that we're in today. Whatever side of the political arena you are on, for instance, if you are a fan of the current administration, you believe in the process that we're going to have to go through, that there may be some short-term pain for long-term gain. If you're not a fan of the current administration, you never did believe in the process, and you never will believe in the process. So this is a very fluid situation that we have to adjust our sights on a daily basis almost. We get a reprieve with regards to the tariff situation. Seems like things settle down. We get announcements that tariffs are going to go into place, and we have to adjust our sights to a degree. We are very friendly, the cattle market, based on fundamentals. The one thing that I want to reiterate, though, is that fundamentals can change. And what I mean by fundamentals can change, it can change with regards to the overall economy. It can change with regards to the overall consumer psychology, because I think we all have to remember, what has brought us to the party? How did we get to the position that we are in today? One thing that I want to stress to each and every one of you today is this. Most of us have a 40 to 50 year working career over our professional lives. We've talked about this substantially over the years. You know, when I first came here in 2016 was the first conference that I came to. I didn't have a very good message for this group. I told Andy, I was like, look, Andy, this market is not very good. We've turned it over. That began in 2015. That continued in 2016. Remember that in 2014, we were selling our calves for the highest price we'd ever sold them for in history. They were bringing $2.80 a pound during the fourth quarter U.S. average in 2014. And 2 short years later, they'd lost half their value. We were selling them for $1.37. So where I'm going back to with this is we've talked to you about the cattle cycles that we endure, that these cattle cycles last 10 to 11 years. Enjoy the time that we're in today, because out of a 40 to 50 year working career, you only get 4 to 5 of these during your lifetime. We've got to stack up that equity. We've got to protect ourselves financially when we can enjoy these times. I've never been in a market in my lifetime that has been demand driven. Like we see currently. We've seen supply-driven markets where prices go high because we're shorting the market of product. That's not what we're doing today. We're producing just as much beef. It's that we're producing the best beef that we've ever produced, and the consumer is willing to pay for it.
But while still positive overall, says there are challenges ahead.
The other vulnerability to the market is the open interest. We talk about the managed money, the funds that come into the market. Over 80% of the volume that's traded in the live cattle futures is by computers. This is what we would term the natural long in the market. Cattle markets, at least for live cattle, don't really have a natural long in the market other than the managed money. Well, look how quickly this dropped. We dropped 80,000 contracts in terms of total open interest within the market. Within just a period of days, there's a very high correlation on this that when the money leaves the cattle market suffers and the price goes down. It's about an 80% correlation with what we're looking at on this. We've held this, right? But this is another vulnerability to the market. If you follow the money, the market will follow. And that's what we have to look at continuously as we evaluate these markets.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Building upon the inaugural Farmers First Roundtable at USDA headquarters earlier this month and subsequent meetings with ag producers around the country. This announcement.
Our small farmer, family farmer first initiative.
Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins speaking earlier this week at a Farmers Roundtable session in Nebraska. The intent of the policy initiative, improving both viability and longevity of smaller scale family farms. Such operations make up almost 86% of all U.S. farmers. The 10 components of the initiative range from streamlining applications to creating more reliable access to resources such as farmland, markets, and credit.
To ensure that those farms can start and stay in business and pass along to the third, fourth, fifth, and sixth generation.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.